Diary of Doom.
What's going on, fanatics? This is the latest entry in the Diary of Doom as we look back on the rich history of Doom Metal and its sister sounds based on the recounted tales of its fanatics. Every week, we will have a different guest spin their yarn. Before that, please follow us on Instagram at Diary of Doom, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Diary of Doom, and subscribe to the podcast over at Podbean. That is our new host website, and that is diaryofdoom.podbean.com. You can also subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes. And if you have any questions or if you want to pitch something or just have a general comment, you can fire off an email to diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. And for this chapter, we have a really cool guest, somebody that I was lucky enough to see last year, opening up for another really cool band. We have Dana Schechter. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, you got it.
We have Dana Schechter here of Insect Arc, which is somewhat local to me, Brooklyn-based outfit. Not a strict doom metal by any doom metal band by any stretch, but definitely something that I think falls into the wheelhouse that people should be listening to and checking out. How are you doing tonight, Dana?
I'm doing good, Dylan. Thanks. Thanks for asking me to join the podcast.
This was really cool that you came on. Obviously, the show I'm talking about, maybe to you, was last year. I got to see you open up for Oranzi Pazuzu at Le Poisson Rouge, which was great because I was supposed to see Oranzi earlier in the year, but they ran into some traveling issues. So it was great to see them. But it was a very, very cool experience to see Insect Arc opening up for them. And I wasn't familiar with your project up until that date, and I listened to it on the way home and at work the next day, and it's just really, really enjoying all your creative output.
That's great. Thanks. We were we had a lot of people coming up to us on that tour that said that they had either heard of the band or had heard of it or had heard a little bit of it or had heard nothing, but overwhelming positive response. And for us, it was really a great pairing as well to play with Oranzi Pazuzu. They just blew our minds every night. And I'd seen them twice before that, so I had some idea of what to expect. But they really brought it every night. Pretty incredible.
Now, did they ask you to be on the tour, or was that like a separate arrangement?
The way that happened was their ex-manager and our current manager is the same person. And he he introduced us to them. And I had met them when they played in New York. I think it was like about 3 years ago. They played a New York show after Maryland Death Fest. And they came up, and a local promoter named Stefan Reduta that I know, he introduced me to them. So I met them all, and we kind of knew each other, and they were familiar with some of the bands that I had been in. So we did know each other, but it was Nikos Yagodikis, who's our band manager and was their manager. That's who suggested we go together, and we were psyched, of course.
Oh, it was a fantastic show across the boards. So you're talking about where you are now, but when you were first, what were your earliest experiences with music?
Well, I grew up in a musical household. My mom played music when I was pretty much since I remember. She had played piano, but we didn't have one initially. She played flute. And so then I played the flute, and then I realized the flute was really wimpy. And I gave that up around age 9. And then when I was in junior high school, I guess I was 12, I started playing upright bass. And I was really into music, but I wasn't, you know, playing in bands for a while still. But I was raised around music. My, you know, so as I said, my mom played music, and my stepfather is a sound designer for feature films. And so there was a lot of music and sound in my life, and has continued to be. I've been, continued to be surrounded by musicians and sound artists and audio engineers. And it's just, it's been really dominant in my life.
You mentioned, you just said your father worked in like in film soundtracks and whatnot. I definitely feel like Insect Dark has a very clear influence from movie scores and soundtracks, and especially like horror movies to me. Mm-hmm. But I definitely can see that influence there. And I is that something you picked up from your father working in the industry and just like learning about how soundtracks are like crafted?
Well, actually, no, because he actually didn't do soundtracks. He was doing sound design.
Or sound design.
It's a totally different. It's actually my stepfather, but nonetheless, just to be precise. I was around weird music from a really young age of all different kinds. So perhaps that was something that changed my perception of what music could be, because some of the films that he worked on were pretty epic, you know, important films, and the sound design was really a creative big part of the film. And so it wasn't that I was just a little kid and only exposed to pop music or something. When I started getting into rock music, I was probably your average California preteen, you know, rock fan, like Van Halen and Rush, Led Zeppelin, you know, bands like that. You know, after that, it all changed pretty drastically around age 12.
That was going to be my next question. Like, when did you start gravitating towards heavier, more experimental types of music?
About 12 years old.
About 12 years old.
Yeah. I had an older sister and a mutual, a friend of hers who had a younger sister who was my age, was telling us about these metal bands that she had been seeing. So I was 12 and my sister was 13 and a half. And I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And for that 1 year when I was 11 and my sister was 12, we lived up in Oregon with my dad. And during that time, this girl, Lisa Silverman, she started sending letters to my sister like, yes, I went to this metal show and there were these rad dudes with long hair. Remember, you know, we were like 11 and 12. And she's like, yeah, and when you guys move back to San Francisco, me and you and Stephanie, that's her little sister, we're all going to go see these metal shows. And we're like, hell yeah. So we did move back to San Francisco and I started going to metal shows at age 12. And as a pretty angsty kid, as was my sister, and we would be in the pit at metal shows. We're like little kids. Yeah, I mean, I see 12 and 13 year olds now and I'm like, oh my God, like.
Get out of there.
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, we were just little shrimps, you know, just getting like battered around, but it was super fun. And so, yeah, I mean, I grew up in the junior young side. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area thrash metal scene when that was happening. So I basically witnessed that whole thing blossom. And I was, you know, I was horribly underage, but I would sneak into all these shows. So I saw Motorhead and I saw Venom and I saw Merciful Fate. And I was there when Metallica blew up and Slayer and Exodus and all these bands. And Metallica and Exodus were really good friends of mine and my sisters. And we were part of this whole community. And, you know, keep in mind, we were very young, but those were our friends. And that's kind of who we grew up with.
It's not every day that people are just like, yeah, I was friends with Metallica, like whatever.
it's a funny thing. I mean, those were our pals. And my sister was James Hetfield's girlfriend. And, you know, like all those people, my sister stays in touch with a lot of them still. And I'm in touch with a lot of them as well. But around age 17, I started drifting off and getting into other stuff and wasn't so into metal. And they were, Metallica was huge by then. But the point is that since I did start really young and it was the 80s, you know, even though I was just like pre-pubescent, you know, I had this chance to see just, I saw so many incredible shows. I mean, you know, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and Scorpions, you know, those bands were already really big, but Motorhead and Merciful Fate, Venom, like, so cool.
I especially just to see them, like, on the rise, and, like, not even really, like, on the rise, because I guess Venom had been sort of around for a few years, but just to be, like, just to see Venom, like, in its prime, or Motorhead and back in their prime, you know, seeing Lemmy on stage. Where you are now, like, creating music is kind of, it's interesting to me knowing that you grew up around the thrash metal scene, because your music is, you know, very much not thrash metal. So I guess that's sort of a segue into my next question. Was there a specific band or a record that made you start to look towards this more experimental side of music?
I think the first sort of doomy album that I heard was probably the first Black Sabbath record.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some of the subsequent records, because of course, you know, those had been out all for a while. And I remember initially not really knowing what to think of it and kind of maybe not even really liking it that much, because I was, you know, I was listening to rock music, you know, with like guitar solos and like, you know, a lot more melodic kind of chord progressions and clearer production. Also, like that first Black Sabbath record, you know, it's real murky.
Yes.
And, you know, as is like the first Venom record. I remember getting that first Venom record and being really psyched on the cover and being like, yeah. And then putting it on my record player and being like, what? Like, I can't even tell what's going on. Like, that first Venom record is probably the first experience I had with anything that I would consider it like almost like a noise album, you know, because it's just so like the production is just so I want to say lo-fi, maybe that's not very precise, but I think I always liked stuff that was in minor keys, and I always liked the sort of like sad, you know, the sad epic songs more than I like the triumphant songs. And so yes, it does. I can see how many people would be confused about the disconnect between, you know, what I grew up around and what I'm doing now. But it's all kind of in there from the same place, because it's about extremes in a way. And it's about channeling energy through the people that make it. So in that sense, I don't think it's any different. I mean, the thrash metal scene was like a bunch of like really young, angry people. And it was mirroring the punk scene. It's just a little bit different, you know? So it's the same thing. Like all these people, like most of them aged like 16 to 20. It's a pretty like angsty time of life. And it kind of depended on like who you went to high school with, really, if you ended up being in the punk or metal, and who were your friends. Because that's what people do, I think. You know, if your friends are punk, you probably end up being a punk. So, you know, there's a really interesting book called Murder in the Front Row by Harold Oyman and Brian Liu, who are old heads back from that day. That is a really interesting document of the thrash scene. And not to like go on about that, but just since you asked, I did want to mention that there was actually a movie, a documentary as well.
Yeah, I remember when it came out. Yeah, not too long ago at all.
You should see it. It's really good. And I mean, I was at so many of those shows that those photos were taken at. So actually, I'm in that movie. So there's a photo of me in high school at that movie, like with all my metal friends. So. But as far as like how did I get into doomy stuff? So after I had been listening to metal for probably about 5 years, when I was like, I don't know, 17 or something, I started getting interested in other kinds of stuff. And I was kind of going more into this kind of shock rock, noise, punk, goth thing, like Cramps and Bauhaus and Nick Cave and stuff like that. And, you know, I was still pretty young. I was 17 or whatever. And, you know, a lot had happened, like the year that Cliff Burton died from Metallica. I was 16, and that's when I started playing bass. And I did that in his memory because we were friends and he was going to give me bass lessons. And we used to hang out all the time. And he, you know, I had, since I had been playing bass in junior high school, and, you know, all those guys and all our friend group, where everyone was like, oh, Dana, you're so young. Like, you should start playing now, because by the time you're our age, you'll be really good, you know? And they're like, we know you used to play music, you know? And so I was like, Cliff, give me bass lessons. And he was like, all right, go get a bass. And a month later, Cliff, give me a bass lesson. He's like, go get a bass. And so, well, you know, we know what happened. And after he died, I went and I got my first bass that same week. And I still have it. And I still play it all the time. It's my main instrument. And so, you know, those were like pretty intense years. So it was the next year. So that was, you know, when I was 17 is when I sort of started veering out of metal and more into stuff that is kind of closer to the genre of stuff that I'm doing now.
That's, yeah, that is wild that you just be like, I need a bass lesson to Cliff Burton, like, you know, the greatest bass player in metal.
You know, could I just say Cliff was the coolest guy? Like, I know everyone's like, oh, Cliff was the coolest, but he really was the coolest dude. And I remember shows outside of Ruthie's Inn, which was the venue that this tiny little place, like, I don't know, it held like a few hundred people, maybe. And that's where the whole scene started. And I remember these meathead dudes who were coming to one of the metal shows. Am I allowed to swear?
Oh yeah, go for
okay.
it.
Okay. So there were these sort of like meathead like dudes came to a show. There was a parking lot across the street from Ruthie's Inn, and we all used to drink vodka or beer or whatever, and then go into the show. And we were standing out there, and Cliff was there, and Cliff always wore bell bottoms and denim, you know, as I'm sure you've seen in all these photos. And these dudes came up and they were like, oh, what's up, hippie? Hey, you fucking hippie, blah, blah, blah. And they were giving him a really hard time. Then he was like, you know, oh, fuck you, you know, and they were getting kind of aggressive. Then somebody came up and they're like, dude, fucking get lost. That's the bass player of Metallica. And they just, it was really classic, you know. So, I mean, he just was him, you know. He wasn't from the city. He was from the suburbs, and he was really into Skinnerd and all kinds of stuff, you know? And, yeah, he was a excellent, excellent person. And I feel like I really did mean it when I said that I wanted to play and start playing. And I was too busy living life to like get to it. And then when he died, I was like, all right, you know what? I meant it. I'm going to go do it. And that's when I started playing in bands right away.
That's like incredibly beautiful, and it's like a strange catharsis in a way to just like pick up that instrument and, you know, fulfill the promise that you made to yourself. That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was really a tragic moment, and you know, one of the first early lessons about how delicate and uncertain life is, and how, you know, we can't take anything for granted that it's going to be here tomorrow. And certainly, you know, we've all experienced that. And I think I recognized that in its full weight at that moment. And that has stayed with me. So it seems like, yeah, you know, we're not here for that long, so let's get to it.
Yeah, that's pretty much a motto I live by almost every day, is what I try to say to myself. So just shifting gears a little bit towards, you know, your project in Insect Arc, you've predominantly been the main person behind Insect Arc, but you've had some other people come on and contribute. Right now you have Andy Patterson, previously of Sub Rosa. So when you bring in somebody else to work on your project, because I feel like you have a pretty specific vision of what you want your music to sound like. Do you let like your influences and like what, you know, what built you as a musician, do you let that like guide you, or do you let other people come in and like, you know, contribute ideas? And like, I guess basically, how does sort of your creative process work?
Well, I wouldn't say that my influences guide me in a literal sense. I'd say that my influences are buried in me, you know, the metal mm-hmm. background plus all the other stuff I was interested in. And that stuff is just in there. And when I started Insect Arc, it was really the main point of it was that it was just me, and it was kind of being done in response to frustration of trying to keep the band together. The band I had before that was split over two continents and just, you know, had gone for over 10 years and had kind of stalled out. And that was really frustrating for me. And I didn't feel like I wanted to have to rely on other people to make music. So I had already learned how to play other instruments besides bass. And I just kind of sat down, and I also, the band prior that I had called Bee and Flower, some people know because NeurArt Recordings put out our first record, but we actually made several other albums that were released in Europe that didn't really make it to the States. But in that band, I was the vocalist, bass player, and wrote all the songs. And that band was more about, for me, a songwriting experiment about how to make interesting chord progressions that were catchy but weird with weird vocal melodies, and have it be beautiful and sad and dark and, you know, heavy and whatever. And so Insect Arc was intentionally not about song form at all. And I didn't know what it was, but I just started making it. And I was like, okay, let's see. I can play bass and I can play synthesizers. And let's see, what else could I do? I could make some weird beats. And I didn't want to use a guitar. And then I literally like went to my local music store, and they were having a sale, and there was a lap steel, and I was like, ooh, cool, lap steel. Yeah, that would be good. So I bought it, and I kind of messed around with it until I got weird sounds out of it. And then I went on tour and supporting my friend's band called Enablers in Europe, and I just kind of threw myself in, and it was just really liberating, and that was what I needed. So, you know, over time, as I got better at figuring out what I wanted to do with it and what I could do with it, then after making a 7-inch and a 10-inch and an album, for the next one, Ashley Spungen joined, and she played drums. And she was in the band for 4 years. And then now Andy Patterson is playing drums. And I would say that, yes, other people's contributions, of course, you know, they do change things. But most of the time, I would say I'm doing really the bulk of the writing and the arranging. And I'm writing a chord progression. I'm writing a melody that goes on top of it. I've sort of got it figured out to some extent, like, how many times this thing's going to happen before the change comes around, and, you know, what are the dynamics? Does it get quiet? Does it get loud? Do we have a section where we can do some improv here, et cetera? So there's not really any one way. Sometimes I write a song on bass. Sometimes I write it on synthesizer or lap steel. And, you know, sometimes people will bring ideas in, but in general, they've been mostly rhythmic or like noisy type things. Like, I've pretty much written all the chord progressions and melodies and stuff like that.
Now, is there, to my knowledge, there's not vocals on your Insect Arc records, correct?
Well, the very first 7-inch, which
very
is called,
first 7-inch, okay.
Yeah,
I haven't dipped in far enough.
Yeah, there's the first 7-inch is called Collapsar. And the B side is a song called Pile Driver. And that song has vocals, and I just didn't feel like I could play that many instruments and sing well, and so I gave up the thing that I was the least attached to at that time,
okay,
which was singing.
So it was just a conscious decision. We just didn't want to do that. That's I think that's interesting. because I listen to a lot of music that is at times like borderline instrumental, and it's can be uniquely challenging for instrumental artists to craft a song that's going to really engage the listener. That's something that I think is a big strength of this band, is that it really draws you in with the scope of it. Everything sounds so big and you just want to like put your hands out and kind of like feel your way through it.
That's a great compliment. Thanks.
You're welcome. And you know, like that's something you can hear a lot on the new record. I was just curious though, like, is Dylan Carlson at all an influence? Cause there were a couple of moments where I was like, oh, that sounds like a very kind of Dylan Carlson-esque riff, but it's not just transposing that and putting it here. It's taking right. that kind of basic concept and then implementing it into the track.
Right. I know what you're talking about. There's definitely that sort of empty scorched earth thing that comes in. You know, one thing that's pretty funny is that I will have to say that actually, no, it's not an influence, because I was already on my third album before I even heard Earth. So I think it's a coincidence. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of funny, but when I started Insect Arc, I didn't have any idea what the genre was at all. And I remember playing a show in San Francisco and some of my old metal buddies were there and I was like, hey, and they were like, yeah, we love that. And I was like, so curious that like the metal scene is really embracing this music. And I asked one of them, I was like, do you know what to call this? And they were like, I think it's doom. And they kind of looked at each other, like kind of had a little discussion, doom. Yeah. Yep, it's doom. And I was like, all right, cool, it's doom. And I honestly, like, I hadn't actually heard half of the popular doom bands. I mean, of course, I knew more about some of the borderline ones or the really big ones, but like some of it, I didn't even know it existed. So I guess that makes it about as organic as possible.
it's interesting. It's an interesting genre because there's, you know, such as yourself, there's just bands that I don't know, you know, it's how they get embraced or how they get kind of lumped into it is I always find kind of interesting. But it's a genre that likes to kind of push into new territory and bring in some new traits and whatnot to keep it a little experimental, because it is, you know, it can be at times a little bit mundane, but
Definitely.
But it's certainly embracive of a lot of different types of sounds. But kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, you were also in the band Zeal and Ardor for a period of time, and I love Zeal and Ardor. I think they're a very important band that's out right now. What was it like working on that project? Because I've seen them, and it's a pretty momentous feeling as yeah. go see them.
Where did you see them?
I saw them in New York when they were supporting the most recent album. So I don't believe you were in the lineup.
Was it the European band?
Which one?
Well, Zeal and Ardor basically is a set lineup of people. You don't know? Oh, you saw them at the Williamsburg Music Hall?
Yes, that's where I saw them.
Right. Yeah, so you saw the full band. So, yeah, Zeal and Ardor, I really like Zeal and Ardor too. I think Manuel is a really talented writer and composer and arranger, and he wrote all that stuff himself, and he played it all too. So his band is, they're his friends, and he mm-hmm. recruited them, and they learned his stuff, like down to the note, that drummer. I've met all of them, of course. The drummer learned all of Manuel's drum machine beats, like insane stuff. Those guys are killer musicians. You know, I got in there because it was their first Europe tour that they had booked, including a show at Psycho Las Vegas on the main stage. And everyone in the band is Swiss, and Manuel is half Swiss and half American, and they all got denied for visas except for him.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, so that was why there was a pickup band, and that's why I was in there. So it's, you know, pretty short, just like a couple months before it, I think. Mm-hmm. They found out that none of them were going to get in, but he was. And so I got a call through a local band manager who was somehow affiliated with them that they were looking for a pickup band. And so the fill-in band was, it was all fill-ins except for Manuel. And it was intense. I mean, I learned all of those bass parts at home on my own, and then everyone did the same thing. And then we had a handful of rehearsals, but it was 2 months before the tour because Manuel had to go back to Europe and continue touring with his normal band. There was no other window of time. So we had two rehearsals and we had 2 months off. And the music is really challenging, super challenging. Like, it's pretty inventive and complex, and usually you would want to go straight on tour, but we didn't do that. So, but it was great. And Manuel is like the loveliest human. I love that guy. Really special and really patient. And I think he's incredibly talented.
That's a mind-blowing story. I didn't know that. I've gone a couple of years to that festival. I've talked about it a lot on this podcast so far. I think that was a couple of years before I went. That's a crazy story. You always hear about crazy stories in that festival.
Yeah.
I've heard so many crazy stories. Last point, kind of a callback to earlier, you know, we were talking about how your music has, a very big atmosphere, and I feel like there's a lot of horror soundtrack vibes to it. Do you have any favorite horror film soundtracks, and just like overall favorite horror films, or just films in general that you think have soundtracks or like an atmosphere that have influenced you?
I definitely have some favorites. I don't know if I would say that they, you know, are direct influences, but I can definitely tell you what some of my favorite horror film soundtracks are. I think my top ones are Morricone, The Thing from 1982. That is incredible.
It is.
Many people, you know, would think because that was a John Carpenter movie that John Carpenter did the music, but it was Ennio Morricone, who is one of the most accomplished film composers. I mean, he did hundreds of films, and The Thing's amazing. I listened to that one a lot. I love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974, Tobe Hooper and Wayne Bell. That's like the first industrial noise album.
It kind of is. It just sounds like pots and pans banging.
It doesn't, though. If you really like give it some time, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's like, I love that. John Carpenter, The Fog, amazing. You know, Goblins, Suspiria, of course. Like, those are all super classics. You know, all the John Carpenter stuff. And then, you know, there's some more contemporary stuff that I really, really like. I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but Christian Eidnes, who did that film Antichrist in 2009.
That was not a fun movie to watch.
Nope, not a fun movie to watch. But that, I mean, horror films are not supposed to be fun.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
context.
So Antichrist, that score is awesome. And then some stuff that's not really proper horror, but just really creepy, like Mika Levy's score for Under the Skin in 2013 is great. And then Beyond the Black Rainbow, this project, Cineola Caves, the director for that is Panos Cosmatos. And then there's, you know, there's so many. I mean, there's so many... there's, you know, these films, Barbarian Sound Studio, Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, there's so many cool composers. I mean, there's, of course, then there's people like David Lynch and Angelo Badalamenti and Carter Burwell, Hans Zimmer, or Max Richter. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's so many incredibly talented people that, I mean, I take it as a compliment if anybody thinks that we sound anything like that. It's kind of my dream is just to make horror film music, honestly.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't just view it as I would never view it as just like as something as simple as just a horror film soundtrack. It's much more than that, but it's incredible, and I love seeing what you're doing with it, and you know, creating those soundscapes. And you know, if you have the chance, go see Dana and Andy live, because it's great. They fill the room with just this like lush feeling. They're awesome. Definitely go see them. And you can go see them coming up pretty soon at St. Vitus, actually, on February
28th. Yeah. Yep.
So 1 month from today, as of this recording, you can go see them. They'll be having their record release party there, alongside another band whose name I unfortunately forget.
It's called, that band is called Gnaw. G-N-A-W, who I also play in sometimes. And Gnaw is also really terrifying in a different way. Definitely check out Gnaw. Yeah, I would say if people listen to the stuff that Insect Dark's been doing, the new album is in line with that. We're going to be playing all new material. We've only done one New York show since, you know, since we got this material together. That was the show that you saw us at, Dylan. So should be good. And we're going to be taking off for Europe a couple days after that. So we're going to be shooting off into the distance. And hopefully we'll be doing some touring, U.S. touring in the fall. But in the meantime, I'm joining Swans. So I'm going to be on.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Excited. I'm going to be on tour with Swans from April through September. So Insect Arc is touring around that schedule.
Very cool. Just a minor correction here. It's February 26th is the release show at St. Vitus for Insect Arc and Gnaw. Was there anything else you wanted to plug? Obviously, the new record, The Vanishing.
Yeah, I hope that people will check it out. It's going to be, there's two songs already released from that. You can find links to that in all the normal places that you would look for that. I think that pretty much covers everything, Dylan.
And people can find you guys online at, I don't recall what your Instagram handle is, if you have one.
It's just Insect Arc. I always like to tell people that to remember that it's Ark with a K, not with a C. So, like Noah's Ark for bugs. So I'm going out and I'm collecting all the bugs, a pair of them. No, but it's amazing how many people spell it with a C, and then they're like, "I couldn't find your website," and it's like, "Yeah, you, because that's not how you spell it." So yeah, I hope people will check out the new record. I think it came out really good.
I think it came out really good. You can also support them over at just insectarc.bandcamp.com. Believe is the website for that. So yeah, like I said, go to the release party and keep an eye out for those future dates, and go see Dana in Swans too, if you get the opportunity to do so. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. This is a great opportunity. I'm really looking forward to the release party coming up. And until then, that will be this chapter of the diary.
All right. Thanks.